Welcome to the Next Brave Thing podcast. My name is Ella Hooper, and I believe that breakthrough is on the other side of bravery. This podcast features brave stories, emotional health, and creativity to inspire you to take your next brave step.
Nora, it's so good to have you on my podcast.
Oh,
thanks for coming.
I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, I want everyone to know that this woman has deeply impacted my life. You came into my life at a very divine time.
Mm.
And it felt very serendipitous, if that's the right word, or just I remember meeting you and feeling like this is important. Like I'm meeting, it's not just a coincidence,
yeah. You
know? And so I think I had gone through a lot. So I was opening up to trusting people as well. So you probably got my, you know, walls up a little bit.
Yeah.
You've told me that. but I just remember like wanting to meet a woman who had a coaching business before because I was like, I mean, I've met a lot of men and they seem to have like, it's kind of how men are wired is to like build something. And, you know, and I think in my heart, I was like, I need to learn from a woman because I'm a woman and I don't want to do it the masculine way. And so you kind of divinely came into my life and you were like, yeah, I just sold my coaching business. And I'm like, oh, this woman has authority. And, you know, and so I remember us having coffee and it's always takes me aback when someone is that intentional with me and asks great questions. And you just did that. And then, I think we caught up for coffee like periodically, you know, and then it would always feel very catalytic.
Mm.
And then you asked me when you really would dig in and ask the deeper questions and challenge me. And you were the one that really unlocked the dream that I really want to go after.
Yes.
Yes, you did. I remember that day very strongly. And then it was sort of the catalyst to me, you know, getting back into acting again, going to New York, and the rest is history.
So good.
I know. So thank you for the gift you've brought to my life. And then I just recently completed your daughter's, who's coming on the podcast, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I told you that.
No, you didn't.
Yeah. So I booked into with Julia. She has a book, Nora's daughter has a book called Dream I Dare You. And then we went through the 12-week coaching program. And it was so transformative because you do the deep work, but you help us connect with vision in a way that I've not had in coaching before.
Yeah.
So I'd love to kind of our audience just to hear a bit about who you are and like your story, how you got here, all the things.
Well, I am so glad to be here. It was interesting because, you know, I started my business about 25 years ago. And so, you know, when you create a curriculum and then you develop it and you teach it to coaches and then you have coaches who coach your you know, coaching curriculum, after a while, it can be sometimes rote. It can be a little bit, you know, mundane. But I remember saying to the Lord that it's a couple of years ago that I said, Lord, I'll do private coaching, but I want it to be with impactful leaders for the kingdom, like serious impactful leaders. And I remember the day I met you. I remember Andy, you were standing with Andy Mason, who I adore.
Yes.
I think he's one of the most integrous, true, authentic coaches, business, everything.
He 100%.
And so I already knew, because you knew him, that there was something about you. But the minute I saw you, the Lord said, she's it.
Mm.
And it was like, God, you want to do coffee? Let's do coffee. And then that was all she wrote.
Yeah.
So I knew you were called to impact the culture for the kingdom. And so you are.
Thank you.
So thank you for having me on. It's a real honor, Ella, to be here.
So kind.
It's really, really an honor. But I think, you know, my background and my journey started, I am by nature a community builder. I'm all things family. I have from a family of 8 brothers and sisters, and I have a 1 daughter, but she gave me 5 grandkids, so that's awesome of her. But I've just always been community. So community business building was where I spent most of my first 20, 25 years of my business career and professional career. And there was always this underlying common thread that I was always doing was, you know, who are you, who are they, and how do we do more business together than we can alone? And so a lot of what I was doing was built on that practice. And so I did a lot of business building communities and helping business owners do that. And then I worked for this gentleman who wrote Why Making Money is Killing Your Business. It was a book that really shaped, it was kind of like being the purpose-driven life and the why when that all came out and, you know, why are you doing what you're doing? And I remember asking myself that question of, why do I do what I do? And I'd had a spiritual mentor when I was 32, I got saved, that I'll never forget. She was an entrepreneur as well, but I went to one of her Bible studies and I walked in and the first thing she says to us is she goes, there's a target and you were created to hit the bullseye. And you were created to be on purpose and knowing what your purpose is to where you hit that bullseye every time. And I remember thinking to myself, I didn't even know there was a target. Like literally, I just came off of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and here's somebody telling me that you should know your purpose to the point where you're hitting the bullseye, and so that's what really catapulted me into going like, why do I do what I do? What is my purpose? So I work with this gentleman for about 3 years. I brought about 200 people into his business community, which is what I do, and just watched him coach for about 3 years on, you know, finding your why. And so for 3 years, these business entrepreneurs, kingdom entrepreneurs, would, you know, create the best laid strategic plans and process maps and how to hire and all the things, understanding their why. But I kept seeing them going around the same mountain, expecting a different result and getting the same thing, or not being connected to their why, or not being passionate about it, or just not like moving them forward in the way that I knew God wanted them to prosper. And so it was about then that I just went, time out. Like, there's got to be something that's missing. And at that time, I read Sean Bolz's book, The Keys to the Kingdom, and asked for the keys. So that's what I did. For 3 months, I just sat in a room for 6 hours a day and just said, God, you got to give me the keys to why these business owners are not seeing the change and transformation in their lives and in their businesses that I know your word says. And so it was in that time that he just downloaded this curriculum that I've been, you know, serving other people with for years and years and years. And now my daughter's taken it to a whole nother level. But it's the concept around, in order to understand what you do, you need to understand why you do. But the why has been talked about so much. And it's almost like, well, you kind of have to just know your dream, or you just kind of have to know, you know, you should know what you're passionate about. But I have this strong opinion that your why comes from your core fundamental beliefs.
Wow.
And so what the work that we do is really understanding, if you understand your core, like you have 2 core root beliefs that were created when you were very young at age. And so most of our beliefs were developed when we had something happen to us or around us, an experience. And then we created interpretation about what that experience meant about us. And then from that, we created a belief.
Yeah.
Positive and negatively.
Yeah.
And so what I've found is that we all have these core, like if you imagine a tree, and I know a tree has 1 main root system, but if you imagine a tree having 2 main root systems, so one of those core roots, belief system, the root of a tree, produces the good fruit of the tree.
Yes.
And one produces the bad fruit.
Yeah.
Right? And so what I find in business and in life and stuff is that we talk a lot about the fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we go, whether it's counseling, coaching, whatever, somebody comes in and goes, you know, I just don't understand why I just can't get past a revenue plateau. I can't understand why I just find myself in scarcity. I can't understand why my husband doesn't value me. I don't understand why I can't get employee engagement.
Mm.
And they talk a lot about the fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And so 20 years in personal development and growth and coaching myself, I found that that's what I did too. But what the Lord showed me was, is if you understand the core root belief that produces the fruit that matters most to you, that he's created you to produce, then you can take that core root and fertilize it and prune it and love it and water it and nurture it. And then you get more the fruit you matters most to you. Conversely, you also need to know your core root belief that produces a bad fruit, which I call the limiting belief.
Yes.
And so that core limiting belief was what produces the bad fruit. But what we tend to do is we go, oh, my husband doesn't value me. And if you cut off that piece of fruit, then everything's going to be good. But it doesn't work that way.
Right.
Right? Because if you don't get that core root belief pinched off, cut off, then the fruit just grows back.
Yeah.
So the concept is that understanding your core root beliefs, then you can pinch that core limiting belief, or you can understand that one core limiting belief the enemy has used against you to keep you from developing and manifesting what God created you to manifest in the earth by pinching that limiting belief, that core limiting belief off, so that the fruit falls off and then you can focus on your vision.
Yeah. And I think, because I've done your work and I've done a lot of therapy over 9 years of being in America. And I think sometimes I found myself getting introspective and kind of feeling like, oh my gosh. And we call it in Australia root.
Root?
Root. You always make fun of my accent.
And I'm so sorry. I do love it though.
Yeah, yeah. I do love it. She's so cheeky. She'd be like, you say student.
Student. Like with S-C-A.
And now since you've like called me on that, I'm like, student.
I know. Now you're going to go back home and they're going to go, what are you saying?
Yeah. But I don't even know if all Aussies say, anyway, it's another conversation. But in Australia, we would say core root belief.
Yeah.
And you say rot?
Root.
Root.
Root. About my Midwestern too.
Come on. Oh yeah, your accent. Yeah. Anyway, so, but when we identified mine and I was, so I would be kind of like, oh my gosh, I have, so many, dysfunctional belief systems, or where do I like zone in? Or you have the people who are just declaring all day long and they're not really getting to the root of their core wounding. And I think when I did your work, it was super helpful because you took kind of key memories, the ones that felt most prominent. And actually, my memory was not as high stakes as I thought it would be. And I'll share it. It was when I was about 4 years old, I was always very adventurous, like wanted to explore new things. And I remember I said to my brother, who's 1 year older than me, let's go to the neighbors. And we didn't tell mom and dad. And so we went off exploring, like, you know, we're hanging out with the neighbors. But of course, that terrified my parents. Mm-hmm. They're like, where is Ella and Jess? Like, it's, you know, and of course, it's going to be like a scary thing. But I remember their big reaction created this, like, it's bad to explore.
Mm.
So I'm not trustworthy to explore, or I'm not. And it's funny, like, it's funny that that's how I interpreted that memory. And I think my parents had a very normal response. So I don't believe it's their fault, but it kind of I remember doing your work and I realized, oh, my limiting belief is like that I make bad choices or that I am not trustworthy. And so, taking a risk, I'm always feeling like, can I trust myself? Is this right? Which I think is normal in risk taking. You have a sense of like, I think some of that is wisdom, but I could feel once I could locate what the limiting belief was, because then I would go into powerlessness. Mm-hmm. Well, I can't really be trusted. I'm not really. And for me, I would go into the kind of powerless freeze spot where I wouldn't actually move forward. There would be this block. And so now, and you were so good at it, you'd be like calling me out. You're in your limiting belief right now. Even I'm like, oh, I'm heavy about this. And you're like, yeah, you call me out. You're like, you're in your limiting belief. So tell me a little bit about like the transformation of, for you personally, of discovering your limiting beliefs and moving in a different direction.
in my life or in the business or what?
Well, I mean, and you could use client examples or your life, like,
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing, Ella, even as you're sharing this, I think the biggest transformation is we are like, when we got your vision or your conviction, what your vision in life was, what was your, do you remember what their vision was?
It's a really long one.
Say it. I know. I tried to get her to shorten it, but.
Well, I just love so many words. Okay. I'm going to fumble. Actually, I'm going to pull it up.
Okay, cool. Cause you guys are going to love this because this is what happens. So she has a negative experience that she makes, that she creates a negative interpretation and limiting belief comes out of that. But then she also has, you know, your greatest place of blessing and your greatest place of pain create the belief system. So her greatest place of pain, or just place that was an uncomfortable situation, as she mentioned, created a limiting belief, right? Mm-hmm. But then you also have a positive experience that happens to you or around you, and you create a positive experience, and then your vision is kind of birthed out of that. So what's your vision?
My vision is that everyone lives in a world where we're fully loved, free to express ourselves and explore, create uninhibitedly.
Yes.
It's a mouthful. And live in joyful connection with unlimited resources.
Yeah. So here's the thing you have to understand. Can you imagine this is the bulk of the teaching that God downloaded to me is the garden. In the very beginning, God said he gave us the blueprint. He said, I created you in my image. You guys clear who you are? Clear. Mm. Yeah, we're clear. Great. And also I wanted you to know, I'm giving you all the resources you need.
Mm-hmm.
The trees of the garden, the herbs of the field, everything else, everything you need, you're going to have all the resources. We're good. Great. You good? Yeah. Okay. So now let's go name the animals. So he said, I'm going to tell you who to be. This is who you are. Mm. This is what you have. And this is what you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
We get it backwards. We do the do. What do I need to do to have what I need to have resource-wise, to be who I need to be significantly? Successfully, right? And so the interesting part was that that's where the enemy came in the very beginning. And so God says, this is who you are. You got it? Identity? Do you know who you are, Ella? What I'm calling you to do and what you're called to do? And you have all the resources? And Ella goes, I do. I'm created to help people understand how to explore and how to get enthusiastically like creative with what you call them to do and like create this deep connection and community and do it together.
Mm-hmm.
And God's going like, you got it. Go. And then the enemy looks at you and go, no. No. If God's people all get this whole thing of who he created them to be from the beginning of time, I'm done. So he says, okay, so I need Ella to go and eat and take a bite of the tree of good and evil. Because I believe that before Adam and Eve ate the tree, they didn't have a negative mindset. They didn't even know how to have a negative thought. And so once they bit into the lie, the apple, the lie, I call it the lie, the limiting belief,
mm-hmm.
their eyes were open
mm-hmm.
to the lie, right? So once we bite off into that lie, the limiting belief, once you bite off, your whole identity, everything shifts in a moment. So Ella can go from being this incredible, inspirational conduit for people to like get excited, go explore, be, you know, go take control of their life, be creative. Like, and then she's in this industry. She can be in that in a moment. And then the enemy puts a little bit of a lie in front of her and said, really? You really trust yourself to go explore and really find like what God has available and be creative and connect with people? Really? And she goes, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And bites off on the lie. And instantly you become powerless.
Yeah.
So there's two identities that in the very beginning that are constantly combating in our lives, but they both inform our purpose.
Yeah. And I think you were the first one that gave me that feedback. I could feel it in myself of like, sometimes I feel powerful and amazing and then I just shrink.
Mm-hmm.
And you helped me. You were like the mirror back to me, showing me like, when I do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a lot of people can get inspired and feel amazing. Yeah. And then all of a sudden the trigger comes in, that core root belief, that thing that, drags you out. And then you shrink. And I think through doing your work, I'm able to recognize when I'm shrinking and what to do about it now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I think, I mean, an exercise that you actually took us through, and this was in connection to our limiting beliefs. You took us through like shame and blame statements. Mm-hmm. And that was like so, gave me so much information mm-hmm. about like, yeah, just about like where I hold judgment towards myself or where I hold judgment towards other people when I feel powerless.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah. Tell me a bit about that exercise.
Well, again, when the enemy, you know, when he came and we had our whole identity put before us for God, and then the enemy came and put the lie, the one lie that would challenge that identity. When Adam and Eve bit into the lie, their eyes were open. And the first thing they, when God says, "Where are you?" Where were they?
They were naked and hiding. Yeah.
They were hiding. Yeah. So shame will always make you hide.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can tell if you're in your limiting belief or if you've bit it on the lie is if you want to go isolate.
Yes.
You want to go hide. You want to numb out, you know, whether it's alcohol or TV or whatever that is. Those are really good signs to tell you that you just bit off on a lie
mm-hmm.
is shame. Mm-hmm. And shame usually has a voice as well, and it will tell you something about yourself in line with your limiting belief.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing was, God said, "Who told you to eat that apple?" And then what did he do?
He blamed. Yes, he blamed Eve.
Yeah, he blamed Eve.
Yeah.
He goes, "Well, she told me to." So that's the other, you'll either go into shame.
Yeah.
Or you'll go into blame.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember when I was doing this work, literally, Ella, I was blaming all the time. It was either my dad or my brother or somebody, mostly men, because that's where my most greatest pain has come from. But I would be like, you know, they're just all about themselves just to support my limiting belief. And so you can tell if you're limiting your limiting belief because you'll either be blaming somebody. You'll be upset, frustrated, you know, all the things, or you'll be numbing, you'll be shaming. So those two are really good signs that you bit off on a lie and you need to get back into the truth and of who God said you are.
Yeah, because it's so, you lose your power when you're in both of those places.
Horrible.
Yeah, it's so, it makes us feel so powerless. And so I think what was actually helpful is you got us to look at our Enneagram
mm-hmm.
and tell us a little bit about that, because that helped me get aware of like the healthy levels of when I'm at my best mm-hmm. and when I'm, you know, triggered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So will we bring the Enneagram into the work?
It's a personality test.
It's a personality test. Yeah. So yeah. You like it or you don't. So
yeah. Some people have problems around it. I mean, don't get too obsessed with it. Don't make it a religion, but it gives you great information.
Yeah. And the information we like to use it for is like when you get your conviction and your standards and your core values and that sort of thing. The Enneagram really is one of the purest tests that kind of shows you what you look like when you're in an unhealthy state, mm-hmm. right? And or you can say growth or stressed. Right. So when you are in your limiting belief, you will be in stress or you will be in an unhealthy place. So the Enneagram kind of helps the personality profile that you're in. It tells you kind of what you look like.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is another really good way of going, like when you look like, you know, we do the top six, you know, stressors, triggers.
Mm-hmm.
So that when you go, "Oh, I look like this," because sometimes we can't say always like I'm in my limiting belief. We know it, but usually the common denominator is I'm stressed, anxious, one of those. Mm-hmm. And so the Enneagram really helps you frame not only the triggers, but it helps you explain what you look like when you're in a healthy state. And so it's a really nice, like, it's kind of like we get you all the core things of, Ella, here's your vision. Here's what matters most to you. Here's what God created you to do. Here's your purpose. And then we take that Enneagram and we just kind of buff it and go like, you see, this is what you look like when you're in your vision and when you're in your full purpose. This is what you look like. And we just kind of the Enneagram buffs it.
Yeah.
We give it a nice shine.
Yeah. Cause I could so, and it helped me when I was triggered because I would be like, I would just ask myself, cause they have like a list of words that kind of describe where you're at in that state. Mm-hmm. And, being an Enneagram 6, if my security is threatened,
yes.
I'm like level 10 triggered. And just being in the whole green card process, like there's so many, like it's such a long process. So anytime there's something new that comes up with it, I'm aware like, oh, that's when I go into, oh, my security is threatened. Mm-hmm. I can notice like I can actually dig into trust here, find my security somewhere else.
Yeah.
And, but I think being a recovering people pleaser as well, because I would notice because of the, oh, I can't really be trusted, my powerless limiting belief. I would need everyone else's assurance and need everybody's like, assure me, give me feedback, like, or what does this person think? Or
to create a greater sense of security.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, social security. Mm-hmm. It's like that. Oh, if everyone is happy, then I can be happy.
Yeah.
And so one of the words that I got from doing this exercise with you was self-possessed. I'm not talking about like demon-possessed, but that to me was like, oh, I'm in my experience. Mm-hmm. I can trust myself.
Good.
And so that was a big game changer doing that exercise. Good. So you can see, guys, how amazing this woman is. She is so amazing. So I think... Tell me a bit more about the conviction side and the like standards, like, that piece of it. Cause we can like hang out, and that's sometimes where therapy can go, where you're kind of hanging out in your pain a little bit more. Whereas I love your work because it brings us into vision and calls you higher, which we need to have a vision. Otherwise, we're just replaying our pain all the time. Yeah. So tell me about the conviction and standards.
You know, I think that vision is very underplayed. Vision is kind of like if you took your vision away, like just took vision away, you wouldn't know where you're going. So vision, as Habakkuk says, it really is to say, write the vision down plainly on tablets so that, you know, in the Bible, so that is the most important thing. So that what? So that the one that reads it, like as they're running by you, can run with you.
Mm.
In other words, people need to know what matters most to Ella, right? So if I'm running by you and I know your vision so clearly, I'm like, I'm that's who I am. That they can like partner with you, and then run with you, right?
Yeah.
And also, so it says so that it won't delay, but it'll come quickly. So the clearer you are in your vision, the clearer it is, the manifestation of it, the faster that comes.
Mm-hmm.
So vision and conviction. Vision is kind of like I'm planting a lemon tree. And so vision is kind of like the seed. So you plant the vision in the ground and then you want lemons. And so you go plant, you know, what your vision is. And so you get a lemon tree, right? But the conviction is what holds it in place.
Mm.
It's what comes and says, you know, when it gets hard and I can't stand in that place of exploration and, you know, being like creating this creative environment of community, when that the wind comes and the storm comes, it's like the conviction is what holds it in place.
Yeah.
So say your vision again.
Okay. Oh, I've got to find it again.
She can say it. She actually knows it.
Okay. To live... that we all live in a world where we're fully loved, fully expressed, create uninhibitedly, live in joyful connection with unlimited resources.
Beautiful.
Okay,
so what's the conviction that when that day gets hard, what's the conviction that you created that says that this is my, I cannot not, I'm going to, this is what's going to hold that in place? What's your conviction?
It's to live carefree and loved.
Yes.
Yeah, because... being the second eldest of seven kids, I just naturally grew up over responsible. So I think I can look on the outsides to some people, like I'm like happy and like sunny and all of those things. But inside, I am over responsible, especially building a school, over responsible for things that are just not my lane. And so for me, learning to live carefree, not careless, but carefree was a greater way for me to slot into, I'm taken care of, everyone else is, I can trust that God will take care of things.
Yep.
And it has helped me kind of let go of things.
So here's the thing too, Ella, is like, you know, Maslow hierarchy, I don't know if you're familiar with that or not, but Maslow says that he has this whole thing that if you don't have safety and security, then you're never going to be able to understand your purpose. And if you don't understand your purpose, you're never going to, you know, goes all the way to self-actualization, significance and self-actualization. So creativity and expression and exploration and connection all live in self-actualization at the top of his hierarchy, right? So what we say is that, oh, we got to have safety, security, all these things in order to be self-actualized. When God says, no, you need to do it from a place of done.
Yes.
Right? So we're always going, as soon as I get this, I will be that. And so your vision is the thing that's already done is that you were created for expression and exploration and connection and unlimited resources. You were created for that. But what's going to hold you in that is that state of being,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
When that little Ella, mm-hmm. it can be carefree. Why? Because safety and security then don't become the ladder in which Ella has to crawl up
yeah.
in order to get to a place where she can be expressive,
yeah,
creative, all the things self-actualization does. So we have to start and done for you is carefree.
Mm-hmm.
God said that from the beginning of time. He mm-hmm. said, I got you, Ella, go play. And you're like, That is not my reality. No, mm-hmm. no, it's not. That is not your reality. So the biggest thing that we teach people to do is not, we don't teach them we don't teach them the things that they need to know. We actually have to help them unlearn.
Yes.
Right? So yes. We had to kind of go, okay, you have to unlearn how to be overly responsibility. Like you were really overly responsibility, taking on mm-hmm. more than you were supposed to.
And I was so blind to it.
Yes.
So blind to it.
So yeah. You had to unlearn how to do that so that you could go, okay, what does carefree look like?
Yeah.
So now you can like stack your day based on your vision and conviction of going like, how do I want to express myself today? What do I want to explore today? What connections do I want to make today? What's carefree? If I were living carefree, what would I do today? Now we can build your daily, your yearly mm-hmm. goals and practices. Now mm-hmm. we have something to build it on. To me, that's one of the biggest things that this work does.
Yeah.
Is it gives you the foundation of like, okay,
yeah,
this is our starting point.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting because being on Julia's dream coaching calls, but also in our group, mm-hmm. there was this thing of like, I think all of us were like, I just want to feel safe. Like, I just want money.
Totally.
Like, you know,
yeah.
like I just want to feel really financially free or whatever. And then you're like, but just that's already done.
Mm-hmm.
What would you be doing if you felt really safe?
Yes.
Oh, I would just create and I would be just free to express myself because I feel so safe.
Yes.
So I think that's why I loved your work because it took it to the next level. And I think there's like good to do therapy and like establish what safety looks like from a therapeutic yes. perspective because some people have gone through a lot of trauma. So yeah. for sure, there's a journey there. But I think what I loved about the work is that you took us to the greater perspective of what's possible mm-hmm. for us.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I would like to just say on a caveat on that too, Ella, is, you know, this work and what we do is we are not counselors.
Yeah. Right?
And so this work has really been beneficial to be able to give people that are in counseling that do need to unpack those places of trauma to be able to go, okay, here's my core root beliefs.
Yeah.
Can we now unpack what happened to me, where that
yes.
happened? Can we now, that's what we recommend that they go to counseling
yeah.
to unpack all that. We touch on that, as you know, but we don't go deep into that.
Yeah.
And so there is this beautiful marriage with
yes.
What we do in the counseling world and
yes.
That dance that we do.
Yeah,
that we go. Our clients can't even tell you how fast they get through their counseling, even when they can take their core root beliefs.
Which is what happened for me.
Oh, really?
Because I was doing counseling alongside, so I was doing body and working through stress responses while doing your coaching program, and I think that's why I got so much breakthrough. Because the thing that I love about the work that you do is some coaches don't explore the past; they just are future focused, which I'm for. Like you kind of pick what you need in the season that you need.
Yeah.
But I actually love that your work goes deeper into childhood stuff and where we learn these things. But then, yeah, your style of coaching really complements the, yeah, if you get counseling alongside it, because
yes.
that definitely, you take the work even deeper.
Yeah. And I would say that that's the other thing I would say if I had one wish for the church.
Mm.
The church is really good at understanding, you know, what matters most and the blessings of God and stuff like that. But I want to give the pain purpose.
Yeah. Speak into that. Tell me, because I was like, oh my gosh, Yeah. Like I want to give, yeah. I mean, that's why I coach people. I'm like,
yeah,
my pain is now got purpose to it because I can help you move through pain.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you are probably really good at people coming in and just don't trust themselves, just don't know how to move forward, that it's just to have no idea how to explore things in life because I've had this, you've had the same experience. And so yeah. I think what we do is we tend to leave that part out when we're talking as Christians because it makes us look less than or weaker or, and honestly, our pain, he said, I work all things together for the good, right? And so our pain is usually the place of our greatest pain. It's the place of our, where we're, the problem we're created to solve in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the other part I love about the protest is like, there is something that Jesus came and said, nope, no. Mm-hmm. As much as he did, yes, blessed are those. He addressed both. Nope, that's not the way we do it. That's, he came to create and solve a problem as much as he came to bring a desired result. And that's marketing 101. And so we need to understand our greatest place of pain because it's actually the problem that people pay us to solve.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what industry you're in. You don't have to be in coaching. But most of the time when I work with business owners or anybody, pastors, that's the biggest thing that I help them understand is that greatest place of pain is the problem you were actually created to solve.
Yeah. I mean, I have clients who are in the beauty industry and they would be like, oh, is this really like, you know, is this a call kind of thing? And I'm like, absolutely. Because if we look at all your pain memories, it's connected to your body image and self-hatred and unworthiness around the way that you look. And of course, you are meant to be in the beauty industry, flipping the narrative for the people that you see.
Yep.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And the other thing I loved about that I do for clients too is that once you understand the gift that you were created to bring, the problem you created to solve, the result we're created to bring, you then, as Proverbs says, your gift makes room for itself and brings you before great and mighty men. So I always tell people, you want to understand how to increase your revenue and be able to charge more? Get better at the one thing that God created you to do.
That's
understand
really good.
It and hone it. Hone your gift.
That's so good.
Yeah.
That's so good. You're reminding me about another exercise you took us through, and it was around judgments.
Mm.
So what is the, you asked us, what is the thing that just pisses you off about people or whatever? And I was like, I've got this manipulative, controlling, and I just like had all these things. And then you're like, the thing that we judge in other people, we judge in ourselves. Can you unpack?
Well, that's
that?
The blame. Like, that's the blame. But the interesting part, here's what I would say as a parent.
Yes.
That I've learned. I was, I'm going to be honest, I was really mad at my dad for many, many years. That was my greatest place of pain. And I think the biggest thing that I have learned that if I could shout anything from a stage for the last time, is our, most of the time, the thing we judge for people on and is the thing that we wished we would have gotten from our parents. That just wasn't so. And so what happens is we kind of go into a place of judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you never get what you want when in a place of judgment, right? It just continues to come on you.
Yeah.
So what I would love to say to your audience is this, is that if we can go back, because I remember that when I got saved, and I remember that I was reading that scripture a couple of years in, it says, honor thy mother and father that it will go well with you. And I was like, I'm screwed. Like, I can't find anything I like about my dad at all. Done. I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm not, this is not going to go well with me. But I remember like when the Lord kind of started showing me this work about if you can find the even the 10%, 20% of what your mom and dad gave you, which is usually part of your vision, like what they actually imparted into you, that's the land that they took that their parents may not have taken.
Yes.
Right?
That's
so the concept is this, is that instead of being judgmental about what you did or didn't get, it's to take the percentage that they did give you and go build on it. Go take the rest of the land. And so it cuts judgment. Most of the judgment that we have against others stem from somewhere in our childhood that we gained it. From mom, from dad. There's a lot of...
Or other family members.
Other family members, caretakers. Aunts, uncles.
Yes.
Yeah, cousins. Yes. There's brothers, sisters.
Yes.
A lot, but mostly in the family. That's where they come from. And so if you can look back and go, wow, look at what you did give me that I didn't have to take the land. It was already given to me that I pretty much pretty sure that your parents didn't give you that you took. it is now a platform that you get to like use to go take more ground.
Mm-hmm.
And that just cuts judgment.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like, if I look at the things that I judge is when people are hypercritical, manipulative, judge, like hyper judgy, I'm judging the judgmental, yep. critical, like manipulative. And I've never actually been described as that person. So I'm not saying like, oh, I judge in them what I am in myself. But when you kind of took us through the root of probably what, why do people manipulate?
Mm-hmm.
And why do they do that? I was like, oh, it's the spirit of rejection.
Yeah.
It's this, or self-pity. When people start to control when they're in self-pity or in rejection, I'm like, oh my gosh, I know I judge myself when I'm feeling rejected. Yeah. Or if I go into that powerless self-pity place, like for sure I have judgment towards myself in that.
Yep.
And that's why I judge other people. But also I have history, not from my parents actually, I'm blessed with that, but I've had caretakers in my life that were very manipulative. And so when you're a kid, you're at the mercy of that. You can't stand up to it. You don't have a voice. Yeah. And so that's why I would hold judgment, is because I didn't feel like I had a voice. But then becoming self-possessed, I do have a voice now.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I think that's kind of where the protest comes from too. Right?
Yes.
It's the thing that we judge in someone else is usually the thing that God's either like, it's blame. It's like when you judge somebody else, it's always what, you know, one finger pointing at somebody else, three fingers pointing back at you.
Yes.
So it's usually something within you that's not been healed.
Yeah.
That's asking, begging for attention.
Yes.
As well.
Yeah.
So the more I can really let God heal the places in my heart, the less judgment I find. I really walk in very little judgment.
I know. You're so safe because of that.
Well, only reason is
I'm so drawn to
if I walk in
like
judgment,
that.
There's something in me.
Yeah.
You know, so now I'm like, oh, like, so I'm just get it, Lord, go get it. Just go get it.
Yeah. And isn't it in Matthew with, it says, as you judge, you will be judged. And so what I notice is like, I really felt this conviction a few years ago around gossip. And I wouldn't say I was like, I'm a very confidential person, mm-hmm. but then there would be pain points. Like, oh, it's kind of around gossipy people as well. But like, I would find myself in that, but I'm like, oh, I'm sowing this.
Yeah.
So people 100% will be gossiping about me. Whereas like, if I'm not, and I just have accepted that people gossip about me and that's fine. Moved on from it. But I was like, oh, I'm attracting this.
Yeah.
Of course, if I'm gossiping, I'm going to create gossip.
Yes.
People will gossip about
Absolutely.
Me too. Well, the ones who gossip to me will gossip about me.
Yep.
You know, it's a very
this
real thing.
This is a really good area too. Chris has been speaking on the vine.
Yeah.
How the vine can just continue to grow if you don't prune it.
Yes.
This is a really, judgment, blame, shame are the areas. If you guys are looking for where you need to prune your vine, look and see where you're blaming, shaming, or in judgment.
Brilliant.
Those are great places to start with. Allow God to prune.
Start pruning mm-hmm. those things.
Yep.
So good, Nora. So I meet a lot of people being a coach, and I know you do too, who kind of maybe were go-getters and they had great vision for their life and they went after it. I feel like, especially when you're in the teenage college years, you're kind of out of the gate excited about life, and then life catches up and disappointment happens and you keep pushing, and there's, yeah, toxic relationships or things that keep getting in the way. And I'm sure you've met people, like, I mean, even though I had limiting beliefs, I still kind of was connected to a vision for my life, but yeah. Some people literally feel numb to vision.
Yeah.
Or, so what would be first steps in kind of cultivating vision or, yeah, creating vision, especially coming into 2024?
Yeah.
Like,
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I think you said the word disappointment.
Mm.
I think disappointment is the probably with all the clients that I've coached, is the thing that keeps people stuck the most.
Yes.
It's hoping for a different result. And you have to understand, you know, Julie wrote the book, Dream, I Dare You. I mean, dream's a huge word. Right. Purpose so was much triggering. Easier to navigate. You know, when I was working on purpose, what's your purpose? That's mine. And she took it to a level of dream. I remember when she came out with the book and she was telling me, Mom's going to be dream. I dare you. I'm like, oh, no. Like, you're going to get crucified in the church. Mm-hmm. Crucified.
Or there's when I bought the book, Dream I Dare You, and it kind of sat there for a minute because I had judgments of like, lovely,
yes.
dreamy,
yes.
shallow.
Yes.
But then I read it and I was like, this is eating steak.
Yeah.
This is meat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, reason why I think people stop dreaming is because the dream is like the only place a dream lives is in the heart.
Yeah.
It doesn't live in the head.
Yeah.
Like, so we can do so much of our life in our head. We can run our businesses. We can be in relationship. We can do so much from our place of our head, but you can't dream from your head. So when Julia says that this is not for the faint of heart, but for those of heart, that's why. And so what happens is the heart is the wellspring of life.
Mm.
And so to what I have found with people, and you know, this work is fairly quick too. It's not like where you have to be in counseling for mm-hmm. a year. It's quick. But if I can show somebody the place of pain and the where they lost hope, it usually also informs the place that God wants to get them, what that God wants to get them.
Yeah.
And it gives them enough of a spark to go, oh yeah, that's always been my dream.
Yeah.
And so it, I think if I were to say, you know, even our church is going like looking what for the fresh vision.
Mm.
Right. And so what happens has to happen is you have to look back in order to look forward.
Yeah.
You have to give your pain purpose. And so is don't leave that part out. That's probably what I would say is when you're looking at 2024 and you're going, what's the vision for 2024? Find out what your greatest place of pain has been.
Hmm.
Find out what your greatest place of disappointment is. Find out don't leave that out when you're talking to yourself and you're writing and you're talking with the Lord. Be honest with that.
Yeah.
You know, my greatest place, my vision is to be married and to be a wife and
mm-hmm.
and to really, you know, to have a family that honors God and really ushers in the family.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been through two divorces
mm-hmm.
and the enemy uses it against me all the time. Like, who do you think you are? You're really going to believe for that? You're really going to like think you're going to be a forerunner for family and to create, you know, what it looks like to have a godly marriage. But I use that to have like to fuel my vision of like, oh, yeah. Well, of course that's what he would never have come against me so hard if he hadn't created me
mm-hmm.
to be the example of what family looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you have to equate both.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love like your stewardship of that, because even I think we had like a dinner for our last dream coaching night. And I felt like all of us were living in our limitless vision that night, because
yeah,
it felt, everyone felt so playful and connected. And that's something that you just bring, because I think a lot of people are like, well, I'm waiting for my husband. I'm on pause mm-hmm. until God miraculously makes him show up. But you actually steward creating family. Like you have beautifully, I mean, our group is, it feels like family. I mean, we did a lot of vulnerability together.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that builds connection, but we also have fun.
Yeah.
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 So you're amazing at that.
Yep.
Yeah.
So use both. Use the disappointment. Let the disappointment have a voice.
Yes.
Write it down. What are you disappointed at? What was your biggest disappointment? And that'll inform what matters most to you and what your vision is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Graham Cook says, I never make a mindset based on a disappointment.
No.
And I had another therapist say to me, disappointment is part of the human experience.
Yeah.
And we just need to learn how to move through it.
Yep.
You know? So
people want to move around it, over it, under it. Nope, you cannot. You have to go through it in order to go through it. It's like you said, with your limiting belief, you have to give it a voice.
Yeah, that's so good.
You have to give it a voice.
Yeah, that's really, really good. So this podcast is called The Next Brave Thing.
Ah.
And it's really about taking action.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. And like, I think sometimes we can be productive and smash out a to-do list.
Yeah.
But then I think the thing that moves us forward and advances us is courage. Like when we take brave action, when we you know, it took courage. You like dug around my dream of acting. And you're like, well, why don't you just go to New York for the summer and do a course? And it was like, whew, that is scary.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I have some judgments towards myself doing that, or like, what's the purpose of that? Yeah. Like, there's so many things. So it took me courage to do that. So when, how is courage important in this whole dreaming space?
Well, I mean, from experience, I would say that when you hit on the thing that matters the most to you, you have to be able to trust God with it.
Yeah.
You have to have somebody that you trust at the level. Like for you to go to New York, the only reason that was as hard as it was because it meant something to you.
Yeah.
It mattered that much to you.
Yeah.
So that's your heart. So mm-hmm. you have to like, to have the courage to go live your dream is like saying you have to create and build a faith in who God is in the midst of that dream. Like courage only comes from knowing who has you in the midst of that and that he cares about your dreams as much as you care. Mm. This is, and that's the whole thing about dreams too. That's the big thing where people go like, well, it's just so self-serving. No, dreaming is the least selfish thing you can do. But God is usually as the one that has put those dreams in your heart.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, I think courage comes from just really, really, truly getting the revelation that he cares as much about it as you do.
Yeah.
And that he's going with you mm-hmm. in this dream. He doesn't just go, okay, good, go get it, Ella. Go New York. He's like, no, I want to do this with you. Mm. I created you to do this with you from the beginning. I'm pretty excited too. You have to like have that to have courage.
Yeah, that's so good. And that sort of segues into my final question and sort of wrapping up today. I think I'm passionate about rethinking God. Mm. I think a lot of people are stuck in their view of God, and I dream we have to actually believe in the dream maker.
Yeah.
You know, like right. Like you mentioned, where it comes from. And I notice a lot of people feel like their dreams are selfish and that God, that's selfish or flesh, or they really just have got themselves in the worker bee. Mm. They're really good servers. They just serve, but they don't think about like, what does Nora want? What does Ella want? Like, you know, so tell me about, your revelation of God's heart for us.
Well, honestly, Ella, I've been practicing this since, I mean, I've known this, I've known it, but now I like know it. You and I kind of set on the same words for our conviction, carefully
yes.
and loved.
Yeah.
And this made me cry. Mm. Like there was a last couple of months where I got really, really started getting hopeless with my dream.
Mm.
And what I realized was that, when God said, I created you in my image, like you have to like press into that first. Like I have been on this journey now for 2 weeks where he is insistent that I know the extravagant, intimate love he has for me.
Yeah.
And that place of being is actually what, you know, it's not the destination he cares as much about as who we become on the way.
Yes, 100%.
100%.
It's all about becoming.
It's about becoming.
Yeah.
So my dream can be to be like have this incredible, intimate marriage with, you know, my best friend. But who he wanted me to know that I was is loved on the way. Like the intimate love that I have just, you know, been so hurt by with men. And so this allowing him to come in and show me how loved, like, and the depth and the width of his love he has for me, and to be able to receive, like, at the level he wants me to receive, that is preparing me to be a bride for him and for my husband. It's been unbelievable. So the dream in itself comes alive by just understanding who he created me to be. Like, you want me to be carefree? And
it's also not creating this expectation, like, it's kind of like people who win Oscars, they get to winning an Oscar and they don't feel anything.
Yeah.
They don't feel the significance that they were chasing, or like, I want to get married so that I feel this kind of love.
Yeah.
And obviously there's healthy marriage that can create, you know, that kind of love. But at the end of the day, husbands will fall short.
Yeah.
Oscar awards will fall short.
Yeah.
And there is like a greater love that we can have from God, because he is love.
Yes.
You know, that we get to experience in the process of waiting.
Can you imagine if on your way to the Oscar, you became fully expressed?
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine if you became fully connected with God and yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine what it would be like to like be completely unlimited resources, that you had everything you needed to get there, but that's who you got on the way? That's who you became?
Dream. That's Jesus. The dream.
That is a dream.
Yeah.
His dream.
Yeah.
He put the Oscar. He may just put it there for you to go, okay, we're going there, but this is what I'm doing in the midst of it.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it. That's the life he created you to live. That's what Jesus died to give us.
Yeah, and that's wholeness.
That's wholeness.
I'm not looking for something outside of me to complete something internally.
No. Mm-hmm. So good.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for coming on my podcast.
Yeah, talking about this stuff.
I know. You're so full of wisdom, and you've been such a great gift and mentor in my life. And yeah, I just owe so much to you. I'm just so grateful.
I feel the same way about you, Ella.
Oh, thank you.
You came in exactly the right time in my life. When I needed a daughter, there you were. And so thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Oh, thanks for coming on.
Love you.
Love you.
Thanks for listening today. Please download, share with your friends, and write a review. If you would like to book in a life coaching session with me, go to my website at www.ella-hooper.com or follow me on Instagram at Next Brave Thing Podcast.